Probably all our listeners know by now, I'm always talking about bringing the good stuff, right? Respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 53 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. This is episode 2 of our 3-part series on end of life. Last week, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, and I discussed how to have a good death. In this episode, Christy shares things people don't tell you about death. Christy, it's great to have you back to continue our 3-episode series on death. And I feel like we had a really good opening episode last week when we discussed how to have a good death in episode 52. So welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Things that no one tells you about end of life. I can't even begin to imagine what those are going to be, but as we mentioned in episode 52, you've sat with 23 people as they passed away. So you've probably experienced many of these things yourself that no one tells you about, I would assume.
I have, and you know, some I learned on the spot, but again, my whole thing, and that's like, I'm the dementia Sherpa, right? So that's all about guiding people, you know, through rough terrain, I call it. And I think part of that is being prepared for what's going to happen to the extent possible. So I always, working with my clients, I always want to make sure people have the information they need. I don't want to turn a fire hose on them, right? And give them that much information, but so that they know kind of what's around the corner and what to expect. So they're not just completely taken aback.
Yeah. And that's an extremely important thing that you can provide as a professional, because as I was saying in our last episode, most families aren't versed at how to handle death and the process and all the things that can come up and how to handle the emotions and the family and all those. So it's just, I'm excited to, not excited, but I'm very interested to hear what you're going to tell us today.
Great.
so what's the first thing that you want to tell us about that no one tells us about end of life?
Well, there's just so much, but I think to me, one of the things that no one tends to tell us about end of life is that you really can create a good death. This really can be a profoundly beautiful experience. So I think that's very important to know. But on the practical side, there will be breathing changes. Often there's something called mottling, which is where the circulation stops flowing the way that it usually does in our bodies, because the body is trying to get blood flow only to the vital organs. So you'll see discoloration in fingertips and toes and feet, and sometimes up to the knees.
Oh, and Christy, are we talking about I believe you call it the active death phase that was in that typical 72-hour window?
Yeah, active dying. Correct.
Active dying. Okay. And so breathing, and you called it modeling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. So the breathing usually causes families some distress because of how it sounds. And that's called chain stoking or chain stokes breaths. And it will sound kind of rattly, and the respirations might not be even, a little bit more shallow, longer time between respirations. And for families, they can really start to feel almost panicky, like, you know, what's going on here? What's happening? Because this can last for longer than you'd like to hear it. And so one of the things that is just really important to know is that it's actually not causing distress for your person. It's a normal part of the process, and it's okay. Along with some, you know, we're talking physical, some physical things that you might notice. Another thing is that people often will have their eyes open, not always, but often people have their eyes open, but they're glassy, or they are fixated on a point. Usually it is about where that seam meets the ceiling and the wall, where that seam is. People often have that as a focal point. Sometimes they will be reaching out, or it looks like picking at the air. They might start talking or mumbling. And again, families that don't know what to expect can see this as a sign of distress. Often people they see a loved one who has passed, and they will, you know, you can have a 90-year-old who is reaching out for her parents. And so when we see it and aren't sure what's happening, we might see it as a sign of distress.
Right.
For the person, it's not distress at all. It's, you know, they are preparing to pass. So those are some important things to know. And another thing is that people hear us, even if their eyes are closed and they seem to be completely asleep and completely unaware of their surroundings, people can hear us. So please, right. And unfortunately, I was in a situation where this happened, where the daughters started talking over their mother's head about funeral arrangements.
Oh, gosh.
And they didn't particularly care for her, as in they didn't particularly like her. And so it was a conversation along the lines of who gives a damn, basically.
Right.
And, you know, relationships are what they are. I totally get that. But I guess I would encourage people, like, go ahead and make a choice. So if your relationship was never anything that you were that excited about, you'd characterize it as a bad relationship, it's okay to not be there as a person is actively dying. That doesn't mean that your soul is going to be damned or anything like that. It's okay to just take care of yourself wherever you need to do that and not be present and bring that energy into the situation.
And I have to imagine that our listeners aren't that person, because they care and they're listening to us to help to learn. So they're likely going to have to handle that family member that comes out of the woodwork, or that we talked about in our last episode of, dealing with to continue to have that honor and respect, which helps lay that foundation for a good death.
Right. And again, because that hearing is intact, this was actually the same situation that I was just talking about, where one of the daughters pulled out, you know, playlist on her iPhone, which sounds great, but it was music that she enjoyed.
Right.
Not anything that her mom remotely enjoyed. So, you know, if you feel like it would be super soothing for you to listen to a certain type of music that you know your person doesn't enjoy, you can always pop in your earbuds and take care of yourself that way while somebody, you know, there's a different playlist going on for your person. So, and then probably somebody right now is listening going, oh, my person's been hard of hearing for a long time. Okay. So there is still that, again, you can call it subconscious or the soul, whatever it is, where we're still communicating, right? And it's with the energy that we bring. And I think probably all our listeners know by now, I'm always talking about bringing the good stuff, right? Respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion. So you definitely want to bring the good stuff into the room with you as your person is passing, because whether they can hear or see or any of that, they can feel the energy that you're bringing. So that would be very, very much appreciated for sure.
The word vibe exists for a reason.
So that's right.
Have a good vibe in there. And,
that's exactly right.
And that started with the planning process of having a good death that we discussed in our last episode, and having everybody kind of on the same page and knowing what to expect. And I can see how complicated that could be. But so towards, you mentioned that, you know, we see these physical things like the labored breathing mm-hmm. and the modeling. But I would think that maybe someone would try to put an oxygen mask on a person that was struggling to breathe, or.
I've actually been in that situation too, where the choice was made, had been made in an advanced directive that no oxygen. And, you know, oxygen typically is just used as a comfort measure, meaning we're typically fans of anything that will promote comfort, right?
Okay.
That doesn't mean that we're gonna, start talking about like, well, would physical therapy help this situation? No, it wouldn't. Right. So right. We're not going to try to cure anything, because that's just not where we are. But palliative, meaning promoting care or comfort, is totally great. But I had stepped out of the room and staff had come in to do care. That's why I stepped out. Staff came in to do personal care. And I came back in and the oxygen was on. So then I was left in the position in this particular situation where I had to make the call of leave it on or take it off, because it was going against what the advanced directive said. So in that situation, what I did was call the hospice nurse and talk it through with her.
Okay.
But you definitely want to be familiar with what the advanced directive says. And the reason, now it's probably becoming clear as we're talking about it in the context of somebody actively dying, the reason people like me are always yipping about, please get the advanced directive done, have the pulse filled out, think about these things now, is because the very worst time you can possibly be asked to make a decision is during a crisis or as someone is dying. That's not, I mean, it is hard to, and this is another thing people don't often tell you. Your emotional state may surprise you. You may be thinking, well, yeah, of course I'll be sad. It's hard to think straight. It's hard to concentrate. It's hard to remember who you've talked to, what instructions you've shared, because there will be typically a lot of different people in and out. So it's, and again, depending on the setting, right? So there may be medical personnel, a hospice team, other family members, and you're just not at your sharpest typically in a situation like this. So think about what it needs to look like, make that plan, and then share it with anybody who's going to be involved at the end. You know, share it with that care team so that there is no weird, you know, oh, well, Joe came in and decided to do X. What? Where did that come from? You don't want those types of surprises in a situation like this.
Yeah, I could see how that could be a very troubling time, obviously, and another good reason to have a hospice team or a professional like you, or you referred to the
death doula.
Death mm-hmm. doula, thank you, last week mm-hmm. in our episode 52. So, Christy, there, what other things do people not tell us about end of life?
Well, one thing is that even though somebody is actively dying, they still, of course, have bodily functions. and they may not have eaten or had anything to drink in a while, but they still have bodily functions. So the care team will need to come in and do personal care. I was actually present at a death in support of a client and his wife. The care team came in to do personal care, and I said to the wife, "Would you like to step out?" And she said, "No, let's stay here." And I said, "Okay." And they drew the curtain. So we're on the other side of the curtain, and the staff rolled him to do personal care. They rolled him to his side, and they brought in four people. So they were being very gentle. You know, they wanted to make sure that he was fully supported. Rolled him to his side, and I heard his breath, and I knew because that last breath has a distinctive sound, and he died.
Oh, wow.
And so sometimes that could happen, and it wasn't because they did anything wrong. It was just, you know, if they had shown up 30 seconds later, they would have come in to do personal care and realized he had just died. So that is something that can happen. And I think another thing that people often don't know is after somebody dies, just after they pass, the care team will come in and ask you if you'd like to go ahead and take a break or get something to eat or go to the bathroom or something. And they'll say something along the lines of, "We're just going to go ahead and take care of him now. And then you can come back in and spend as much time as you like." If you don't know why they're doing that, you might really bristle at the idea of, you know, what do they think they're doing? Kind of a thing. So as I've said, actively dying takes a lot of energy. Sometimes people get a little sweaty and clammy. Often they have not been, you know, in a shower or in a bathtub or something like that in a while. Depending on other conditions the person may have, there may be a distinctive smell too. And then, of course, when we pass, there is no muscle control at all anymore. So final bodily functions will happen. So the reason that a care team will come in as soon as they know that a death has occurred, the reason they will come in is to try to spare you that. That's why they're asking you to leave, because what they're going to do is they're going to clean the person up and bathe them. Don't worry, they're not going to take the body out of the bed and put it in a shower or anything like that. They're going to do like a bed bath type thing where they clean somebody up, because number one, they've been caring for this person too. They care about the person, and the best way they can show it in that moment is to preserve their dignity even in death. So they are going to clean them up. And when you come back in, your person is going to have their eyes closed, because that's not always the case at the time of death. Their hair will be combed. They'll be cleaned up. They'll be wearing, you know, a nightgown or pajamas, which they may not have been as they passed, but something clean, and usually with their hands folded on their chest. So they will look very peaceful. They'll be cleaned up, and then you are welcome to spend as much time as you like with your person before the mortuary is called and they come.
Wow, that's a really great service and benefit of having that care team. And I can see how initially, if you weren't ready for that, you could be taken back by, well, what do they mean? We're going to take care of him.
Right.
And everything that's going through my mind now is I just feel so sorry for the families that are doing it without a care team. You know, they're experiencing all this on their own for the first time, maybe. And hopefully some care partners out there are hearing this and are learning more and understanding, but also see the value and importance of having a care team help you and professionals, you know, guide you through the end of the disease.
Yeah, I think it's important because, again, like I was saying, you will probably be surprised at your reaction. I know, you know, again, speaking for myself and the so many families that I've witnessed too, during this, shock is pretty common. And the funny thing is, shock ends up being shocking to us. People are shocked that they were shocked when it happened. And here's kind of how it works. This is how I explain it. With every day, even though you know your person is going to die, right, and has this condition that is going to ultimately end in death, and even after they transition into active dying, even after all of that, you will still be shocked when they do pass. And the reason why is because with every day that they didn't, and you don't even consciously realize this, but with every day that they didn't, it didn't happen. So that kind of becomes your new normal. And then when it does happen, it feels just as shocking as if, you know, somebody else died that, you know, wasn't ill and got hit by a bus or something. It's still very shocking to you. So that's something that's just kind of, you know, tuck away in the back corner of your mind. That's normal. Another thing that's really normal is cognitive impairment in the family. And it's not permanent, but it is, I'm talking about not remembering who you said what to, repeating yourself a lot because you have no recollection of who you said what to, of being a feeling of disorientation, like if you're in a care community or a hospital, not necessarily knowing your way to the exit or where you parked your car, those types of things, things that you normally would know. And that's, you know, if you don't know that that's going to happen, it can induce a feeling of panic, because especially when your person just died of dementia and you might start thinking like, oh my God, is it happening to me too? And just know that this is a normal part of what happens.
Just being overwhelmed by all the emotions and the finality of it all, I can see would be so hard to get through. And I can see how that would definitely happen.
Yeah. And so, and the other piece of that, with that emotional soup there, is you may feel really guilty about all of the stuff that you feel like you could have done better, or that you didn't do what you should have done, or whatever. I mean, guilt is one of those super useless emotions that kind of eats on us like a parasite. That is normal. You will feel that. And the other thing, and this is shocking to a lot of people, is there may be a big, huge part of you, maybe 99% of you, that feels very happy for your person. So that's not the shocking part, right? We all, I mean, nobody likes to see their loved ones suffer. So when we perceive that that is over, we're like, yay. Even if it's a good death, we never wanted them to have this condition in the first place, right? So we're like, okay, that is over. Thank God. And so you have this enormous feeling of relief, like, okay, whew. And you're happy for them, you know, that they're out of this. And then guilt, you'll start to feel guilty because you feel so good about it.
Right.
It's kind of one of those no-win things.
But you have to allow yourself to grieve, right? You have to. I learned that from a guest I had when I was doing webinars. You have to let yourself grieve and get through that process, and not try to force yourself through the process. Just kind of let it happen and flow naturally.
Right. So I have a friend that owns Beyond Your Loss, and she works with grieving people. And she always says the best way to get through grief is to go through it. you can't go around it, behind it, under it, over it. It's one of those things that you actually do have to just go through. And that is, you know, it's going to involve a lot of different emotions. And one day you may feel like everything's fine and, you know, wake up feeling great. And, you know, between your bed and the bathroom, you like doubled over, like, oh my God. So that's all totally normal. And part of grief, and your memory does get sharper. You do, you know, you get to feel whatever you feel, right? Because feelings just are. There's no right or wrong to any of that. And I always tell people, I'd never try to talk you out of your feelings. So you get to feel whatever it is. But I think it's important to know too, that raw grief, like the shock of everything that just happened, even if it was anticipated, that lasts for about 3 months. And, you know, in the United States, we get like 3 days off from work, right? Which is, you're still in shock. I mean, 3 days, it's almost like it's like tipping a server a nickel. It's kind of almost insulting, right? Well, the nickel is insulting, but the 3 days to manage grief is insulting. So just know that you're not going to be like 100% like you were, and it's going to take some time to bounce back, and that's totally okay.
So Christy, you've sat with 23 people and their families as they've passed. Is there one major thing that you wish they all had known about the end of life process, or is it back to this, you can have a good death?
I think, you know, for the most part, the people that I have been with, my experiences with it, the vast majority have been good deaths. And that's such a huge blessing. I think, you know, the one thing that I really hope that people take away from this is it's something, it really is a privilege to be there as someone passes and to lend your energy, your vibe to them as they're doing that. It's a very special experience and something that I've never regretted. Like that said, I know it's not for everybody, but it's such a privilege.
Well, I thank you for sharing that. And I'm sure that'll go a long ways with our care partners who are out there. And, you know, having you on the show, who, you know, you are a specialist in dementia care, and having sat with 23 people as they passed, I think that makes you an end of life specialist, whether you call yourself that or not. But,
anybody who works for hospice is listening to this going, 23, she's a baby. She has no idea what she's talking about.
True, probably. Right. But for those of us who haven't at all, that's just incredible. And I thank you for, you know, doing that, because it takes such a special person to do that. But what I'm leading to is, just so everyone knows, next week we are going to go, in our next episode, we're going to go into detail more on who the end of life specialists are, because it seems to me one theme I'm hearing is having them involved is very, very helpful to having a good death.
I think so. I think they're crucial.
All right, well, Christy, I do look forward to having you back next week to have that conversation. And is there last thing you wanted to share today before we wrap up?
Just always, you know, same thing, is I hope that any of our listeners, if they have a question, please feel free to reach out. Christy@DementiaSherpa.com. Be happy to answer your questions.
All righty. And I will provide a link to her website on the show notes. So, all right. Well, Christy, thanks again. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Death isn't a topic most of us are comfortable with discussing. However, it's an inevitable outcome of life for all of us. But talking about death and planning for it can make what might be otherwise a bad death a good death. Be sure to visit Christy's website at DementiaSherpa.com. You'll find the link as well as all the referenced resources in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode53. Bye now. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.